everybody. Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. How are you today? I am so happy. It's a beautiful autumn day here in New York City. I'm back in New York. I was traveling last week all around Florida and miss doing this show. And I do miss it, so I'm really glad to be back today. We have a lot to talk about. I'm sitting here with a lovely pot of Kukicha tea, one of my favorites, and I'm all ready to go. I wanted to talk, before I bring on my first guest, I want to talk about the publisher of his cookbook, the Vegan Heritage Press. Their about page talks about how they are here to change the world one book at a time, and we've had other Vegan Heritage Press authors on this show, especially this year. Some great cookbooks have come out. Baconish by Leinana Two Moons and Aquafaba by Shu Dever. Really amazing recipes in both of these books that are changing the world, not just because they're showing that we can use plant ingredients instead of animal ingredients, but there's so much creativity and ingenuity and great flavors that we should all be experiencing, because it's not hard to do. And I'm glad that these authors are here to make it easy for us and give us inspiration to do more. And with that, I will bring on another Vegan Heritage Press cookbook author and one of my favorite cookbook authors, period, Jason Weirich. He's got a new book. It's released today on World Vegan Day. It's called Vegan Mexico, and we're going to be devouring that in this first part of the show. Jason is the executive chef of The Vegan Taste, the first nationwide meal delivery service founded in 2006. He's the author of Vegan Mexico and Vegan Tacos, the New York Times bestselling co-author of 21-Day Weight Loss Kickstart, and the food editor for New York Times bestseller Living the Farm Sanctuary Life. In 2001, Chef Jason reversed type 2 diabetes and lost 120 pounds by going vegan. He left his position as the director of marketing for a tech company and became a chef so that he could use his experience to help people live healthier, compassionate lives. Love it. Jason, welcome back to It's All About Food.
Yay, thank you for having me.
Yay. Now, the last time I spoke to you, I believe your daughter was about to be born.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I can't believe it. It's been two very quick years.
And tell me, has everything changed?
Yeah, it has in ways I didn't expect, which has been really wonderful.
Yeah, that's what parents always say. Anyway, I'm excited that your new book is out, and just like Vegan Tacos, it's excellent. What I love about your books is that, number one, you really know what you're talking about. Your expertise comes out in every sentence, and I love that you share right down to the nitty-gritty the things that we can do to make wonderful, great-tasting, not just vegan, but all kinds of food that just so happens to only contain plant ingredients, which is my vision for the world when the vegans take over. Don't let anybody know. That's my secret mission. Because it's the most delicious thing. Okay, so are you excited about today?
I'm super excited. My publisher, John Robertson, wrote me yesterday to tell me that the book had already sold out before it was even released today. And it's been second printing, and the second printing's on its way to Amazon. So it's
that is wonderful news. Congratulations. I wanted to say in the opening, and you just reminded me of it, vegan cookbooks now are flying off the shelf. There are so many of them, so many different kinds. People always loved cookbooks, and now people are opening up to vegan cookbooks. And what I wanted to add about Vegan Heritage Press is, unlike other publishers, they're not just jumping on what they see as a hot new trend. Vegan Heritage Press is all about vegan cookbooks, period.
Right. And they were in this game. The Robinsons were in this game long before vegan became popular. So they're one of the warriors to me. They're one of the guys out there really championing what's going on.
And the real deal.
Yeah.
Because someone publishes a vegan cookbook and it happens to be on a bookshelf in a store doesn't mean it's the best one you can buy.
Right. I fully agree with that.
In fact, most of them aren't. I'm glad they're out there and I'm glad there are more of them because it supports my secret mission.
Yes.
Jason, your cookbooks are in the top in my collection of many, many vegan cookbooks.
Awesome.
And I'm not just saying that. Okay, so let's dive in. One of the things that I loved about Vegan Mexico is there are stories, and we love stories, and there's history, and history is always fascinating. So one of the things that I was tickled with was the mole poblano being created by nuns. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So there are actually a lot of great foods that have come out of convents and monasteries and stuff like that, like beer in Belgium. Belgian beer is wonderful, created by monks. In Mexico, there are plenty of different desserts and dishes that were created in monasteries and convents. And the mole poblano is hilarious because it was basically something I think a lot of people can relate to. When you have guests coming over and you're like, oh my God, what am I going to make?
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what they did when one of the higher ups in the Catholic Church said, hey, I'm going to come visit you guys. And here's like a day's worth of notice. And they were like, what are we going to do? So they started kind of with some basic techniques that they had already had with like roasting tomatoes and beets, chilies and that sort of stuff. And then they just kept adding to it and adding to it and adding to it. And I imagine someone sitting there going, we have to make this butter. We're going to throw in, okay, dash oregano. Well, what are we going to put in next? Let's do some raisins. And throughout the day, these nuns were creating this, what became the classic mole poblano. And they served it to, if I remember right, it was the bishop. And they served it to another person. Fell in love with it, and the fame of mole poblano spread pretty quickly.
But I think it's the famous dish.
And I just imagine the creation of that dish is really the repetition of something that almost every home cook goes through, which is, oh, my God, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course. Now, sometimes that can go in a good direction and that can go in a bad direction.
Yes.
I'm thinking of one bad direction in my mind right now, but I don't want to share it. And just sometimes, you know, especially for people that aren't that familiar in the kitchen, but they want to cook and they want to make something special for people, it can be intimidating. And that's why it's important to have a good cookbook if you're going to choose a recipe. I always suggest practice before you make it for a group or a special person to make sure it's going to be the way you want it to be.
Right.
And it gets easier, too, when you practice making a dish.
Yeah, and to me, a good book has recipes for all skill levels. So you have recipes for beginners, and then once people get used to the flavors and the techniques used and that style of cuisine, and they can move on to more advanced recipes like the mole poblano.
All right. So the next thing that popped out from the history was the impact that the Spaniards had in Mexico, two things being meat and wheat.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I did a lot of research. I just love history and anthropology and that sort of stuff. So I always do research on the recipes that I'm looking at, even when I don't have to, because I'm just curious. And I always find myself going down that rabbit hole. And so I knew that meat was used sparingly pre-Columbian times, but I didn't know just how sparingly it was used and how much that changed once the Spanish came, because they brought chickens with them and they brought pigs, and they were pretty heavy meat eaters at the time. And so a lot of the meat-heavy dishes that we see in Mexican cuisine now are a direct result of that Spanish influence.
I missed that last part.
I was going to say, and the wheat is interesting because obviously wheat wasn't around in Mexico before the Spaniards brought that, but the Spanish used the northern part of Mexico as kind of their colonial breadbasket. And so that's why if you go to northern Mexico and the southern U.S. and in those areas, you'll find stuff like wheat tortillas used as much as corn tortillas.
Mm. What I love about history, especially bringing history forward to present day, is that things that we think are hardcore traditions, things that we think, oh, you can't change it because it was always made that way. We know in cuisines, it's a dynamic process and it's continually changing. I'd like to think continually improving, but that's not always the case. But as different groups of people move around the world for different reasons, some of them good and some not so good as refugees or whatever, or when things are difficult in one country and they can't grow food enough anymore, or there are droughts, or maybe people just want a better living, or they're adventurous and want to find riches somewhere else. The cuisines adapt. And here we are in the 21st century, and the one way our cuisine are adapting is by making traditional foods, traditional dishes with plant ingredients instead of animal ingredients.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I see like a living cuisine takes foods in from different cultures, and a good one will export its flavors out. So that's why in Mexican cuisine you'll see a Lebanese influence. You'll actually see a Chinese influence in some parts of northern Mexico. You'll see a Japanese influence in parts of Baja California and Baja Sud and places like that. And then, of course, you see Mexican food all over the globe. But what I think is interesting is when a culture of a cuisine exports itself somewhere and then brings new ideas back from the places it exported to. So we're talking about with vegan cuisine, obviously, in the United States, Mexican cuisine got very popular, and there was a pretty strong contingent of vegan chefs doing a lot of good work. In the U.S. and Mexico started, of course, to sort of doing that too, but pretty soon afterwards, it caught on to the vegan movement that was really growing here in like Germany and Britain and the United States. And so in a way, they brought their cuisine out of Mexico to some of these places and then imported vegan versions of that back into Mexico, or some vegan ideas, or great Mexican chefs started taking those vegan ideas and creating wonderful vegan Mexican dishes. Really complex, beautiful process.
Yeah, and Mexican food is just, it's just unnatural to be entirely plant-based. It's just bursting with plant flavors. And I think you say it somewhere in the book, but in many ways, the flavors, the sauces, those are the things that are the stars. And replacing the meat, the animal meat, with the plant meats, that's just like the chewy vehicle that you can smother with all of these great flavors.
Right. I mean, you can make a great tamal just out of masa and black beans, and then you pair it with an amazing sauce, and no one's going to miss the meat.
No, absolutely not. I can't pronounce it, but can you tell me? I always love when I learn about new ingredients, and one of the ones that I learned about in your book is this fungus that grows on corn.
Weevil coche.
Yes. I'm curious about that.
Funny. It is. It's just this fungus that grows on the outside of corn. It has this really pungent, earthy taste to it. And here in the U.S., it was considered a problem. It was a blight for a long time. But in Mexico, it was cut off the corn and eaten as a delicacy, used in tacos and chili rellenos and crepes and stuff like that. And now that Mexican food has gained prominence in the U.S., corn growers in the U.S. are now selling huitlacoche as a delicacy and not calling it a blight anymore. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's just like so many weeds. Things that were called weeds are now expensive greens in the farmers' markets. Do you think it can be used to make some kind of vegan cheese?
I'm not sure. I guess I have this theory that you can, if you do the right thing with an ingredient, you can turn it into basically anything. So I'm sure there's a way to turn that into a vegan cheese or use it as a flavoring agent for a vegan cheese.
Yeah.
But I can't do it right now.
Who knows? Okay, stay tuned. Now, you give some really great detail about the importance of pan roasting and charring and how much flavor it gives. I just want to share a quick story. This is not the way to do this. Don't try this at home. But I was just in Florida for a week. My partner Gary and I were there. We were staying in one of these little timeshare resorts that had a tiny little kitchen with not the best kitchen supplies. And I thought I would just quickly heat up some peppers to put with some other things. We got some great produce from Josh's Organic Market in North Hollywood, one of the best farmers markets on the planet, I think. And I had no oil. I didn't want to cook with oil. So I just sliced the peppers and put them in this little frying pan. And I started doing other things. And all of a sudden, the smoke alarm went off. And I had perfectly charred these peppers. Gary grabbed the pan. He deglazed it. Everything was fine. But the peppers were great. But let's just talk about how wonderful pan roasting and charring can be for flavor.
Seafood isn't just the part that you put in your mouth. It's an entire experience. And sometimes that means smoking out your timeshare.
But, yeah, it can be really wonderful just lightly blackening the vegetables can do so much for flavoring food.
Yeah. And I love leaving those charred bits on there instead of peeling them all off. Like most people will just peel off the entire skin of a blackened chili, but I always leave a little bit of that charring on there because it gets kind of this primal grill flavor.
Absolutely.
Even if you didn't throw it on the grill.
It just looks appetizing. It looks so primal is the best word for it. Okay, some recipes I want to point out in the book that got me excited. I love chorizo, and chorizo tempeh is just the best.
I love that stuff. So did you do the chorizo verde, the green chorizo, or the red chorizo?
That was like the next thing I wanted to talk about. But yeah, red. red. I love that, and it was just awesome. And I guess the green will be next. But I love that tempeh. I've mashed it before, and it looks like ground beef. It's just such an easy replacement. Easier.
It is. And it has a really nice nutty flavor that goes along with all the other chorizo flavors. So I love the way they play with each other.
And for people that don't naturally like tempeh because it has this mushroomy fermented flavor to it, when you drown it in spice... That goes away.
It does.
And then it's just this lovely vehicle, again, for sauce and spice. Okay, the next thing that I'm very grateful that you pointed out, I remember your queso fresco in the Vegan Tacos book, and you offered a faster trick, which is not entirely fast, but it's easy. Just takes time, and that is using Kite Hill as a ricotta.
Yeah, you can just take Kite Hill's ricotta cheese and then just spread it out and let it dry a little bit, and you have queso fresco. And it tastes amazingly like queso fresco because it has a little bit of that that acidity to it and the flavors that you get from a culture, because the Kite Hill cheeses are cultured, unlike some of the other almond ricottas that I've seen. And so they give you that real cheesy flavor.
I'm always telling people to find their kitchen for so many reasons. I happen to love to cook. I know many people don't. I have a feeling some people don't like to cook because they don't have the skills and they feel intimidated or they just don't know where to begin. And on top of that, so many people are busy today. They don't have the time. But I still keep insisting for so many reasons, because I think we should all experience the best things possible, the best food possible, the best flavors possible. And the way to do that when it comes to food most of the time is to make it yourself, unless you've got someone like Jason Weirich who can cook for you all the time. still, I think if people aren't going to cook, I know people like to watch food shows and they love to read cookbooks. And this is a good cookbook to read because you learn so much about what goes in to food and what goes in to sauces. And we need to know what's in our food.
We do. And I think we need to see excellent food. I mean, there's something to be said for a 10-minute recipe, but there's a lot more to be said about a 10-minute great recipe.
Yeah. It's frustrating. I'm sure you've heard it many times, but, you know, people keep insisting on recipes that are quick. They want to make food that's quick. Now, you've probably taken advantage of that because you created a meal delivery service 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because so many people don't want to prepare their food.
They don't, or some of them don't have time. I mean, we have a lot of people that are doctors and what are putting in these insane work days, and they want to have good food, but they don't necessarily have the time to come home and do it, or they don't have the emotional energy to like go and do that kind of work and then come home and do that stuff. Or they're doing other things. Like, we have one client that does this and then also runs an animal sanctuary.
Mm.
So, right, she's a doctor and then she runs an animal sanctuary on top of that. So,
wow.
Yeah. We help those people out. And, of course, people with health problems that are used to eating the standard American diet, and they're like, what am I going to do now? I have to go vegan. So we help those people out because we get them great food, and then it's easy for them to stick with a vegan diet. They get healthier. When they get healthier, they inspire other people, and then more people go vegan. That's a great circle.
Yeah, there's another circle. The other recipe I wanted to point out, which I haven't made, and again, it's all about the sauce, is the bacalao.
Oh, yes, that's a fun recipe.
Yeah, so it's like, I haven't ever had the real version, the fish version, but I imagine it's very flavorful, spicy, saucy.
So there are actually several different versions, because there's the Spanish bacalao, which is, there's the Andalusian bacalao, there's the Basque version of bacalao, there's the Mexican version of bacalao, there's a Portuguese version of bacalao, and the one that I did, of course, is the Mexican version, and it's based on kind of like a salsa Veracruz, which is this tomato chili salsa with with raisins and olives in it, which has that heavy Spanish influence. And here you just, in Mexico, you basically turn that into a soup, and then you add the bacalao, which is a fish, to it. So in my version, of course, I use something else in there, and you get the same great soup. And it's an incredible experience. And I love that it's kind of a versatile recipe, because you can use it as a salsa, or you can thin it out and use it as a soup or a stew base.
Okay, if anybody's tired of the way they're eating, there are so many recipes in this book that are going to wake up your palate. And I think it's worth taking a couple of weekends, maybe one weekend, to read the recipes, kind of figure out what you don't have in your pantry and get the ingredients you need, and then take another weekend to dive in and make some of these recipes. The last ones I wanted to bring up, and they may actually be my favorite because I haven't seen anything like this, are the beverages.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
Yeah, they are good. Now, I'm a big fan of agua fresca, and I just like blending up a melon or a tropical fruit. I don't even add sugar to it. I just mix it up and pour it over ice, and it's amazing. But what pointed out to me, I haven't had a chance to make it yet, it's actually savory, the cucumber agua fresca.
Yeah, that was a pretty interesting experience, because I went down to my local Mexican market and they have all these jugs of different agua frescas, and I was like, cucumber agua fresca? I've never tried that. So I got it and I took a sip, and I was expecting it to be sweet like every other agua fresca that I had had. And all of a sudden here was this jolt of salty cucumber with these chilies in it. And I was like, what did I just eat? What did I just eat? This is incredible. I have to figure out how to make this. And so I just went in and I talked to the people working there and asked them how to make it. And they told me, and that's the recipe that you'll find in that book. This is really nice, refreshing, slightly salty drink with a little shot of chili to it. It's fun.
Is it almost like a soup?
It's this weird, unique thing, which is why it totally caught me off guard when I had it, because it's really thin like a drink should be. And it has that refreshing cucumber taste that you get. Like, if you ever had cucumber water, then you have a pretty good idea of agua fresca tastes like. But then it has this little bit of saltiness added to it, and then the heat from the chilies to wake your palate up. It's completely unique.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely try that. And then the last one I wanted to talk about, even though there are so many I could talk about, but the corn ice cream.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty good.
It makes sense because corn, if you have good corn, it's naturally sweet.
Yeah.
So why not make ice cream with it?
Right. And you get, and I love that you get the different textures of corn with those. So you get an ice cream made with a corn base, but then you also get a pop of fresh corn kernels right in that ice cream.
So let me just ask you, this isn't related to Vegan Mexico. This is related to another Vegan Heritage Press book. Have you toyed at all with aquafaba?
No, I haven't. Not because I don't want to, but because I'm actually pretty pressed for time myself.
Yeah, I bet. But it's like, I just can't
get over it.
It's the craziest thing.
Actually, it's one of the most interesting cookbooks I have in my collection, too. And I've got a lot. It's kind of on my list once December hits and everything slows down around Christmas for us.
Right. Well, you're going to have fun. I don't know. How long have you been vegan? Since
15 years. I was vegetarian for 5 years before that.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, you know, egg whites they didn't exist for me for like the last 30 years. So to have a new ingredient to play with, it's like my new toy.
It is. It's funny because I accidentally had some chickpea water spill on my stove because it overboiled.
Mm-hmm.
When I was making chickpeas, and I looked down and then I saw when it cooked, it had that meringue-like texture. And I was like, why didn't I think of that before?
We're all thinking the same thing, Jason.
Right.
when beans cook and they get really hot and they're boiling, they get that white foam on the top.
Right.
It's right there. Okay, anyway, let's get back to Vegan Mexico. Thank you for writing it. I'm really excited to dig in a little more about it. Looking forward to what comes next from you. And good luck with your release today. I'm sure there'll be many, 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 many printings. And it helps support my secret mission. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye. That was Jason Weirich, everybody. Author of Vegan Mexico and also the author of Vegan Tacos. Both of them are great cookbooks. And if you like Mexican food and the Mexican food that we have here in the United States, it's almost like a bland version of all of the exciting recipes that are in these books. Highly recommend them.